Oh, it was interesting talking to Jerry Dipoto there, Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710. Kind of want to run through a little of that. Jerry telling us that there will be roster moves today, and so we can start to speculate. If he was unwilling to share them, got to imagine that maybe not everybody's been told, and obviously you want to make sure that that stuff is heard directly from them rather than coming through the media. But, you know, look, you can start to speculate on what's going on. Obviously, Matt Brash has struggled, and if he's not going to pitch for 4 days, you could bring up a reliever for a couple of days to give yourself a little bit of help in the bullpen until you call somebody up to replace him. Could that be Levi Stout? Could that end up being a George Kirby, right? I mean, so yeah, I think those two will be names that I'll be watching. We know that Steven Souza Jr., whose local kid, was pulled out of the game early last night. So the assumption is that he's on his way here to Seattle, another outfielder. So what does that mean? Could that mean that Jared Kelnick is going to be sent down for a little bit of seasoning and kind of get him out of his head here for a little while? I think it's very possible. And when you hear Jerry say that it's unfair to those guys that they lost the season of development and that they're trying to figure it out in the big leagues and how challenging it can be with all of the great pitching that they see night after night after night. And oh, by the way, we're going to use AAA. We're going to use the minors aggressively, he said.
As a life preserver.
As a life preserver. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know whether that means Jared Kelnick would be sent down today. But certainly if you hear that news from Scott Servais a little bit later, I can't imagine that you'll be very surprised now, right? I mean, that seems like a one-for-one kind of a swap that we may very well see. So I don't think it'll be forever, believe me, and it may be exactly what he needs. There is no one rooting harder for Jared Kelnick than me. I am all 100% in his corner, and the fact that if he does get sent down today does not tell me that he is a failure or that he's not going to make it, and I'm sure it'll be hard for him. Right. Remember some of the things he told us back in April or March, rather, how hard it was when he got sent down. Right. And how you question things about yourself as a person, as a player, et cetera. And eventually it took his mom coming and kind of helping him kind of clear that and move forward and kind of stop feeling sorry for himself. I hope that this time he takes it, as Jerry just said, it as a life preserver and as an opportunity for him to just kind of get his swing back, get his confidence back, get into the groove, and if that's the direction they go, I think I'll understand it. And we'll see. Maybe that's not it. Maybe they end up going and doing something else. But it does sure sound as if that might be a real possibility today.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. Some of the best young stars in the game. Like, this isn't a... I know what happened last year, and he mentioned, and I'm glad he did, because it put perspective for me.
Mm-hmm.
These last two and a half seasons, were odd. And some of that development is not the same as it would have been in, you know, the two seasons prior, and the amount of games you play, and everything else that goes into it, the spring trainings and the contact with coaches or whatever it is.
Well, he's not the only one. I mean, Joe Adell, who is another big-time prospect, another outfielder with the Angels, young guy who's now been up and down a little bit. He was just sent down a couple of days ago. He's in his third season and still finding his way, unfortunately, out of the Angels lineup. And he's hitting a little bit better. He's hitting 240 instead of 130 or whatever it is Kelnick's at right now. But again, kind of the same situation. So I don't know exactly how this is going to go down. I don't think necessarily that it's Kelnick, but if it goes in that direction, yeah, all right, that would make some sense. And if it's Matt Brash, that probably makes even more sense. Again, life preserver, right?
Yep.
Unfortunately, and you heard Scott say it last night, just didn't have the command. And three outings in a row, I don't know how often you can't keep learning that at the major league level. You gotta go get it figured out, get your command right, and come back up when you're good and ready. And they have enough options right now that they don't need to do that. So what do? If that's the situation, you probably bring up some relievers first, right? You've got 4 days before you need to fill that spot again, and you kind of figure it out. Do you want to go Stout? Do you want to go with Kirby? Do you want to go in another direction? So, I'll be anxiously looking to see what they do. And it makes sense, man. You go 2-7 on a road trip. You got to do something.
Shake some up.
And sometimes it's not just shaking it up. Sometimes for the guy's own good, right? I think that's what you hear from Jerry. He gave the list of all of the pitchers that they'd seen on this road trip, and you put yourself in the position of being a struggling, gripping the bat too tight Jared Kelnick, and it's like, geez, when do I get a break? I got this guy, and then I get that guy, and then I get this guy, and then I get that guy. You know what sort of reminds me of at times is you ever gone swimming in the ocean when the waves are like a little too big, like when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
And the waves are just like a little too big.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And like you get knocked down by one, and it feels like the moment you get back up, you get plowed by another. And you're like, oh, you finally like get your bearings. You get drilled by a third one. And you're just like, when does the set end? Like, when do I get a break?
Yeah,
I'm sure that's how Jared Kelnick and some of these guys feel at times, where it just feels like pitcher after pitcher after pitcher. They're all throwing 97 with, you know, ridiculous spin rates and locating perfectly, and they're not taking advantage of the couple of opportunities they have.
And the other way for Brash is if you're not locating perfectly, they're going to make you throw a ton of pitches. And you know, you're trying to pitch around an Astros lineup or a White Sox lineup, or whomever you're throwing against. Like the first few series we've had, we've seen some pretty big studs. And yeah, you're going to throw a ton of pitches, you're going to walk some guys, and now, you know, maybe it's time for an assignment.
I'll never forget in college, went to Hawaii for the first time, went to Oahu, and we took the some Jeeps and went up to the North Shore, which is where Sunset is.
And Haleiwa.
Yeah, we saw Sunset and Pipeline, which are sort of right next to each other. I never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. To this day, just thinking about how large those waves are kind of gives me like a sense of anxiety.
Yep.
They're frightening. Yep. Like, it feels like nature should not present anything that looks like
and
that.
And it shouldn't be fun for people.
No, and then there's these guys out there just like, yahoo! They're like getting mauled by these waves. Like, I don't know.
It's like storm chasers.
That's a level of pain that I'm not interested in like taking on voluntarily.
Right. I did it. I mean, growing up in Montana, we didn't see a whole lot of waves.
So you did a lot of surfing?
Nah. First time I went to the beach, it was in California. I was probably 15. This is the first thing. It's like, I'm going to go out. I want to get out there.
Whoops.
Got smoked by a couple waves. It's like, tail between the legs. It's not for me.
Yeah, no, that'll happen. And don't laugh, though. There are some inland places you can surf. In fact, mm-hmm. when we were looking at Munich, Germany yesterday, because that's where the Seahawks are going to play this year, there is a river in Munich, much like the one in Bend. If you've been in Bend, you know how it works there. Under the bridge there downtown, they have like some guys that that surf on a little spot in the river there.
Uh-huh.
The same thing is true in Munich. The river there kind of turns in such a way, and there's some little white water that you can go out and surf in one place. Like, you don't move, you just in one place, and it's like being on a wave.
So are you going to do that when are you going to Munich?
I'm not going to Munich necessarily, and if I was, I can't surf. But yeah, I mean, a person who can surf who goes to Munich could experience that. So there you go. All right, we'll come right back, give you everything you need to know, then you hear from Brock and some of his thoughts on what's changed with the Seahawks and why they've been so different in the draft this year than in previous seasons. I think Brock's got a pretty interesting theory on it. Don't go anywhere. It's the Mike Salk Show here on Sales Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, yesterday frustration started to set in for the Mariners. They were not shut out again, thankfully. They avoided that with a Eugenio Suarez two-run shot late in the game, but that's about where the good news ends. Once again, largely shut down anyway by Justin Verlander. Matt Brash, unfortunately, suffered another rough outing, gave up four runs in just three innings. Couple of stories here. One is the bats, which have obviously been problematic. They just were not hitting and haven't throughout the course of the nine-game trip in which they went 2-7. The other, of course, is Matt Brash, who's now at three straight starts in which he really didn't have much and didn't have his command. Scott Service fairly blunt in his assessment.
Struggle for Matt again today, obviously command-wise, having pitched against the Astros here earlier in the season. Kind of knew what to expect. They waited him out a little bit and, you know, got some hits with runners in scoring position. So, he's learning. It's hard lessons in this league when you're playing against veteran teams. And, you know, those guys had a plan against them and they executed it. So,
Yeah, we'll see what happens, because as much as yesterday was about some of that frustration, today is about what they're going to do about it. We heard Jeff Passan earlier say he still believes in this team, doubling down on his belief that they're pretty good. Maybe not quite as good as they started, but certainly not as bad as they've looked here over the course of the last week. And then talking to Jerry DePoto a few minutes ago, I think he got very much the same sense. Jerry believes that they will continue to hit and will kind of get back to the team that they were supposed to be. Also mentioned that we may see some roster moves here today. Don't know exactly what that means. Could mean some pitching, could mean a change in the outfield as Steven Souza Jr. was also lifted from the game yesterday, so there's a possibility that he may be up with the team, and we'll see what that spells. But look, if Jared Kelnick is sent down to try to get his confidence going again, that would make some sense. If Matt Brash is sent down and you get a bullpen guy here for a little bit of time before eventually choosing a starter in 5 days, that wouldn't be a huge surprise as well. They've got some options. They got some good players in the minors, so we'll see in which direction they choose to go.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, I kind of talked about it throughout the day. The Mariners aren't the only ones struggling to score runs. They're also not the only ones with some prospects who are not quite living up to billing yet. By the way, Julio Rodriguez has been really good over the course of the last 2 weeks as Jared Kelnick continues to struggle. But look in L.A. where Joe Adell, who is a top five prospect along with them both, he was just recently sent down by the Angels. So those issues have taken place throughout the game. As Jerry mentioned earlier, you know, we do see that that group of prospects lost a year of seasoning due to the shutdown of the minor leagues and COVID. So not necessarily a huge surprise that it's gone that direction. We also know that the baseball has changed this year, and ESPN had a very good article about that yesterday, kind of going through some of the changes to the core of the ball and how it's not as springy as it's once been. And it's led to some big-time changes where instead of 15% of fly balls leaving the park, only 10% of fly balls are leaving the ballpark. That's a major change, especially on the balls that just barely got over a year ago. Now all of a sudden those are outs caught at the warning track, and we've seen how that looks around baseball. Hopefully this is a good thing. Hopefully it means players will start to change their approach at the plate and start to a little bit more of a level, even swing, and we'll see a little bit more action and more balls in play. Other news from Jerry DePoto is that Kyle Lewis continues his rehab. Started down in Arizona, even though people weren't paying as much attention. It's continued now in AAA. And his estimate is that it would probably go another, 20 days or so, maybe not even quite that many. So we'd start to see him somewhere in the third to maybe fourth week of May. So assuming everything goes well, and we'll certainly hope for that, would be really nice to get that bat and to start to see the player that we got to watch as a rookie in 2020 win the Rookie of the Year award.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, it was quite the night. They said it would be a big bleeping deal, and they absolutely delivered on it. The Sounders, CONCACAF Champions League champions after defeating Pumas last night, 3-0. It was a big night.
Four is from Alex Rodon. Talavera backing off. Ladero, Rui Diaz!
Yeah, that was one of the three goals they scored. 3-0 the final as they become the first MLS team in decades to win this particular cup. First in its current format, and they will now become the first MLS team to play in the FIFA Club World Cup tournament as well. NBA playoffs, and of course, Phoenix last night all over the Mavericks. Chris Paul just turning it on late, had a great night. Same with the Heat. They took care of Philadelphia. Both series now 2-0. Neither looks very competitive. Four games in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Carolina, Tampa, Minnesota, Edmonton, all winners. And now all those series are tied at one, except Carolina. They're up 2-0 over Boston. That is everything you need to know. I got a text here that I like. Can I read your text?
Oh, yeah, sir. Go ahead.
We're kind of talking through the Seahawks and how they've, you know, changed some of their philosophy with the draft this year and trying to figure out why, right? Why did they have a draft that instead of being universally panned, people are saying, wow, that was a really good draft and you didn't get too cute and you drafted the right types of players at the right time, et cetera. You didn't try to outthink the room. And we're trying to come up with some different ideas as to why. And we've talked through sort of the post-Russ world. We've talked about some of the new assistant coaches and what that means. We've talked through trying to figure out...
was it a losing record?
Just losing record, right? Jody Allen is a big part of it. She was in the draft room. How much, you know, impact did that have after her big meeting with Pete and John a couple of months ago? I got a text here from the 360, and I like this one, who says, and this is related to the Russell Wilson idea, Justin, that you said, the Seahawks spent the last few drafts filling holes, not building a team.
Mm-hmm.
They're building another Super Bowl team now. That's the difference.
Yeah, I saw that text. I was going to read that to you as well.
Yeah, there you go.
There was a guest on Wyman and Bob who said something about one of the reasons the Seahawks maybe have had tough drafts is they were trying to just replace people.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't rebuilding something. When one dropped out, they were trying to slide another in its place, and they weren't exactly effective, especially later in the rounds.
Yeah, and this is sort of an interesting idea of, hey, you're not just trying to sustain, you're trying to build, and that those mm-hmm. are two very different points in a career, different you know, jobs essentially. And maybe that's what Pete meant a while ago. And I'll play the sound here when he talked about Jody saying they were back in their wheelhouse. I think we assumed at the time that was maybe what he was talking about, building rather than sustaining.
Well, I thought it was a way to illustrate how tuned in she is, you know, with us and how connected she is to what we're doing. You know, she knows our history. She knows when we started years ago, you know, we were made hundreds of deals to try to put our team together, and we had to have a huge mind to envision where it could go and how soon we could get there and all that kind of stuff. And she knows that because she's been around us enough that we're always firing ideas and thoughts and, you know, and challenges towards in her way of things that we would like to attempt to do and all that. So she realized that it is a creative moment for us.
Yeah. And then she ended up spending quite a bit of the draft in the draft war room with them. And I do wonder what kind of an effect that has. So talk to Brock about this. I think you'll find his answer very enlightening, and you will hear it next. The Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says, no, he's not a burner.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael. How are you?
Well, you sound upset.
No, not at all.
You sound bummed out.
No.
Well, you sound a little miffed.
It was great having our podcast yesterday, a lengthened, extended podcast. No, nothing at all. I'm excited. I did get a text from just this morning from one of our, I don't think he didn't get invited to the old VMAC back in the day as a top five.
Not a top five.
Top five.
Yeah.
But he was always a contributor, and that was, of course, Bo from L.A.
Well, that's probably because he was in L.A. We only took people that were local.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would have been – but he would have – I mean, he would have crawled.
Probably would have flied in,
He would have crab walked.
Yeah.
He would have bear crawled all the way up from L.A. to be a part of that day at the VMAC. He said, hey, I was listening to you guys' podcast yesterday. Do you think the Seahawks see Drew Locke like Ryan Tannehill? They didn't use him right in Miami for Ryan Tannehill and didn't use him right in Denver with a curmudgeon of a coach. And if they can surround him with a run-first system that features play action, he can take off like Ryan Tannehill, like Alex Smith. I'm trying to think who the Seahawks are imagining Drew Locke becoming.
Well, I think those are
two fair names.
Yeah, I think that's fair, although it's interesting. I don't know if you listened or heard any of Richard Sherman yesterday. He didn't even think he's going to be the guy. Like he thinks they're going to go with Geno.
Ooh,
yeah, okay. Here's a little bit.
Because I think Geno's going to be the guy. I think they believed in what Geno was able to execute over the few games that he started that Russell missed with the finger. I think they felt good about those games.
He also mentioned he tries to come up with Drew Locke's name and couldn't remember it.
That's kind
of
tough.
Yeah, no, here's a little of that. Let's see if I can hold on.
This draft gives him a chance to not to turn it over a lot, and that's what Russell was really good at. He was not going to turn the ball over 2-3 times a game, you know, you hope. That's what he's going to need out of Geno and
oh boy,
Drew Locke. I couldn't even get it out.
Yeah,
that's a tough moment right there.
No kidding.
Well, I would say to Richard, who's a savvy businessman, my kind of comeback would be a Mike Salk in some way, and that was Richard. If they really like Geno, don't you think they'd give him more than $300,000 guaranteed? Not $300 million, not $30 million, not $3 million, but $300K guaranteed. Right. Don't you think if they would have probably wanted to get that deal done right away because they would have thought, man, the market's out there for him. And no, Geno's a good fallback. Geno is someone they're comfortable with. Geno likely will be on this roster this year, but I think they would love for Drew Locke to take this and be energized like Ryan Tannehill was, like Alex Smith was when he went to Kansas City, when people wrote Ryan Tannehill off. He's a bust. He's inaccurate. He can't play. He can't throw. You know, he did more in Miami than Drew did in Denver, but Drew's also younger, much younger than Tannehill was at that point when he made the move to Tennessee.
So I was asking this question earlier, and I don't know the answer to it, but I threw out a couple of possibilities. By all accounts, the Seahawks had a different draft this year, right, than they've had in nearly a decade. They did it differently. They're being graded differently. They didn't get cute. They drafted according to, you know, the big fellas up front, like all the different things.
Fairly conventional.
Right, much more conventional. Fine, let's use that word. Why? Not why are we saying that. Why did it happen?
I think there's a couple things that happened. And Pete has referenced this a couple times. So, and when you know, Salky, a coach repeats himself,
yes,
it is important to me because that's front of mind and something they talk about. And he has mentioned a number of times, Jody wants to compete. Jody's a competitor. Jody Allen's a competitor. She wants some pushes. And so I am sure whether it is Jody, some of the people around her, really challenged, mm-hmm. you know, how you all went around this draft process the last 5-6 years. Why was it so good early? And why did it fall off? And I think challenge some of the practices, maybe compared to some of their peers around the league. So that would be one. But I think two is just a very obvious and very natural. They were conventional in 2010 because they had prime real estate. When you're there on Park Avenue with the elite players, you don't screw around. So when you have number 9 in the draft, which they had not had mm-hmm. since 2010, right? They'd been a playoff team the next year, miraculously, and then took off and were never around first round grades. And so when you get around those kind of guys and you sit in the top of the second round, you sit in the top 10, you don't mess around. You don't get cute. And, you know, there's enough talent and players there that are difference makers in their opinion. And you don't need to trade down. So mm-hmm. I think those would be the two reasons.
Well, and you're in a post-Russ world and you have new assistant coaches. I mean, there's a lot of different potential reasons, but I probably gravitated towards the Jody Allen thing also.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she was in the draft room with them. And I don't know what that meant or how that affected them. We were sort of joking earlier that it's like mom coming upstairs to watch you do your homework. Like, I know you said you did it. Right, I do this with my kids. Like, I know you said you washed your hands. Yeah. How about if I watch you wash your hands? Because they don't smell like you washed your hands.
Yeah, Macy has been at the kitchen island this week.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, let's just say, even as a junior in high school.
Really?
Mama Bear's like, phone away. Yeah, computer away. You're going to sit here and you're going to do your homework and you're going to get this stuff done.
I'm going to watch you do your homework because I know yes. you said you did your homework.
Correct.
But I want to actually, you know, watch.
Well,
what
no,
that
no, they didn't grade it
like.
Yet. No, they haven't entered the grade yet. No. I handed it into the teacher. No. It was because
Macy.
I was out of town and I had to make that thing up. And
don't air Macy's dirty laundry. Oh. That is unfair to her poor Macy.
Are we on the air right now?
Yeah, that is unfair to your poor daughter who yes. who is the best. How yep. dare you? I wonder if that had any impact on them.
I think it has played a role in this entire offseason. I think it played a role in the purging of some staff early on in the offseason and getting younger and more motivated and finding ascenders and competing to get, you know, some of the best guys on the market and Carl Scott and Sean Desai and making that happen and then making a move offensively and elevating the right O-line coach to fit with the right young coordinator. And I think all along, Mike, since the season ended, there has been a push for her from her. She has been involved. That has been documented and she wants to compete to win. This is important to her. You know, and I know people lump in the Blazers and all that fiasco down there and all that stuff. This is the crown jewel. This is the gem. This is the one that she was living in this city and being a part of it and being a businesswoman in this city knows what Paul Allen established and what Pete and John did and what winning a Super Bowl meant and what 12s all over the place has meant and what giving back to the community by millions and millions and millions of dollars has meant. This is an important one, and there's a reason why she's sitting there wanting to compete to get it right.
What would you do if somebody checked your hand the way that ump checked Madison Bumgarner's hand
that
yesterday?
Weird, wasn't it?
Is that not the – I'm going to spend some time on this here in a minute. Is that the strangest darn thing you've ever seen?
Well, I'm a touch guy, so, you know.
You are.
I'm a side
hugger. That's your love language.
I'm a bro hugger. You know, I go in there with the first
–
and then I pull in and do a little pat on the back. So I'm okay with a little affection. But even for me,
dude, that was weird.
That was strange.
It was, I mean, the way he's looking at him in the eyes
almost,
while he's doing it. What are you doing?
It's almost as if he wanted that.
You think?
He sought that reaction.
Of course he did. What do you mean? It's almost as if. It's if. That's what happened. The umpire baited him into getting thrown out of the game.
Hey, how was the electric blanket? Was he still warm?
We just talked to Jeff. Jeff's doubling down, by the way. Doubled down. People were mad at him. He says, and Maura just tweeted it out. I'll quote her. We can, quoting him, we can sit here and lament these M's being 12 and 13 and those sorts of lamentations are completely warranted because they look like crap right now. I still buy this team. I still believe in this team, says Jeff Passan.
Wow.
Doubling down.
You went Old Testament lamentations, huh?
Is that what that is?
I don't know.
I don't either. But people should go listen to this podcast from yesterday if you want to hear a great discussion of how Brock intimidated his son into using the number 7 in his little league. So, Brock, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Oh, and on the podcast, you can hear all about the USFL. I'll be flying there and talking to you from Birmingham tomorrow.
Is that true? Yes. You never mentioned that. That's interesting.
Goodbye. Right.
There you go. Brock Heward, the voice, one of the voices of the USFL, if he hasn't told you. You can catch the him every morning at 7:45 and 9:30. And yes, Brock and Salk podcast came out yesterday, went out last night. You can find that at brockandsalkpodcast.com. Another long one. We just kind of kept going and going and going on the draft. I was asking Brock, like, I don't know, it was 7 questions of, you know, they were basically, you know, who was the best pick, who was the most questionable pick, who was the best value pick, the best fit, et cetera. And he had, I think I correctly predicted 6 of his 7 answers. So you can play along as well. Go to brockandsalkpodcast.com. If you haven't watched the Madison Bumgarner thing, you have to do so. Strangest thing I've seen in sports in forever. Honestly, it is so weird.
It's the weirdest thing I think I've ever seen on a baseball field from an umpire interaction.
It's so strange.
It's one of the creepiest things I've seen, not even just in sports, right? In a long time.
he's flat out massaging his hand while staring him in the face, almost longingly. Like, he's got that face. Like, if you have, Maura and I are always talking about our dogs, but if you ever, like, you're petting your dog and you kind of, like, give them a good scratch behind the ears and they really get into it, they sort of, like, look up at you and they sort of, like, zone out while they're doing so.
Yeah, he's
and in
doing
your
that
mind,
look.
You're like, oh, my dog loves me so much. And it's like, that's kind of the look that the ump is giving him. He's just, like, this faraway look in his eye while he's staring into Bumgarner's face. And, like, clearly he's trying to get him to... You know, he's trying to bait him into something. Here's what Bumgarner said afterwards.
Have you ever had a hand check quite like that?
No, I haven't seen one like that.
What do you think that he was doing there?
You've seen the video. You've seen the video. I've seen the video. I was there. It's you guys see it plain as day.
I was there is my favorite part of the. I mean, you've seen the video. I've seen the video. I was there.
He sounds like a country singer.
Madison Bumgarner. Yeah. I mean, both the name and the way he speaks.
It great voice, too. I mean, he sounds like he probably could be a singer.
It is so strange, though. I mean, I've found myself looking for, like, weird massage scenes, and the one from Meet the Fockers is probably the one
that
came up.
It's a technique I learned in Hawaii. It's a Lomi Lomi massage, named after the gentle waves of the Polynesian Sea. The waves go in, and the waves go out.
Anyway, it goes on from there. How is Jennifer Coolidge not the masseuse in that movie, by the way? Doesn't that seem like it would have been perfect for her? The same sort of, like,
airiness? She doesn't strike the same hippie vibe that Barbara Streisand did in that
movie. She can't. I guess that's true, but she, I don't know.
I would always imagine Jennifer Coolidge with, like, a martini glass. I don't think that would go well in the
I guess I was thinking of
scene.
The Jennifer Coolidge from White Lotus, where she's just like, so I guess she's getting massages in White Lotus, maybe not giving them, but... it really was strange, and it does feel as if, you know, this is kind of the way umpires and officials are right now. They're almost baiting guys into it and trying to show their authority and, you know, you're not going to change the game and you're not going to show people up and you don't get to be in charge. We're in charge. And I was asking about it earlier. I've met a couple of officials in my life. They've never been anything but very nice. But I do wonder whether some of these guys are, like, you know, essentially internet trolls who end up in a position of power like that and then decide to use it in that way and that purpose. I don't know. It's weird.
Did you know Joe West has his own podcast?
Does he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a surprise. I'm not surprised that Joe West wanted attention after he was done.
Exactly.
I mean, like, some of these guys are attention seeking. And, you know, we're kind of talking through it. In some ways, I get it. You've got an incredibly public job where the only feedback you get is negative.
When you do your job right, nothing happens.
Nothing happens. When you do it wrong, everybody talks about what a jerk you are.
And there's no such thing as, like, a home game for you.
No, nope. You're always on the road.
And you're always the enemy.
Yes. I mean, it does feel very thankless. And, you know, look, we do this job in very, you know, a small amount in the public eye, obviously. And, you know, I know firsthand how challenging it can be when the entire internet or huge group of people turns on you or whatever. And it hurts, right? It hurts your feelings. You question your self-worth, et cetera. It's not surprising. Thankfully, in this job, you get a little of both. You get people who will write occasionally. All right, not. I don't know what it's like, but people told me that sometimes people will write nice things positive about you, and you get other positive feedback, and you're like, oh, that's great. I'm making a difference in people's lives, and it balances off the, you know, 90% of the people who've said something rotten, or in my case, closer to 100. But I'm sure if you were an umpire or an official, you never hear anything nice.
Absolutely not.
No, who's ever like, oh, you know who's a great ump is Tom Hallion. That guy's just, he's great ump. And it's like, love it. It's, oh, like, Tom Hallion's doing the game. Going to be a great game.
It's like being an auditor. I mean, there's not a lot of people who are like cheering for you.
Like an IRS auditor.
Yeah. Like it's not a lot of people who are excited to see
you. Oh, you're on the phone? Oh, that's great. Why, I'd love to meet with you.
You're a great auditor.
I love the IRS. Oh, I'm so glad to see you. Thank you. Why don't you come look at my books? I can pull out all my Visa receipts. This will be great. Let's do some ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, well, we definitely wanted to do something in honor of the big match last night. Sounders winning the Cup, and they're going to go to the FIFA Club Champion. I mean, it's just tremendous, the World Cup that they're going to go to. 68,000 people last night in the building.
Yep.
And just a party atmosphere, it looked like, from start to finish, and certainly at the end. Maybe by now, Sounders fans are starting to wake up after the party that they had last night on a Wednesday night. What did you tweet last night,
right,
Justin? Something about hanging out on a school night?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember exactly the way I worded it, but it was something to the effect of I'm so badly miss celebrating rowdy, insane sports with insane sports fans at packed bars around stadiums.
On a school night.
On a school night, especially.
It just makes it feel like, oh, I'm not even really supposed to be here tonight, which is great.
Oh, it's good. But yeah, now getting up at 4 in the morning.
So
a little harder.
We were thinking about what it is, you know, soccer related, and came up with kits, right? Because they have their kits that they, that instead of uniforms, they wear a kit.
Yep.
And so with that in mind, we thought we would do kits ranked. Kits ranked. So number 5, and Maura thought of this one. Thank you, Maura. Great job.
I think we learned that we have to get more involved in order for her to.
Right. But now she's not. She seems mad that she even came up with this. Listen to that sigh. That's it's sheer exasperation.
I want to know which one
she brought
up.
Well, if we're going to do word association instead of ranked, I think this person deserves their due.
Number 5, Eartha Kitt.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl.
I believe
Santa,
I have the story
baby,
right, that she did not appreciate Madonna's version of this.
I can tell you with 100% surety, I've never heard Eartha Kitt. I've never known that was an Eartha Kitt song.
All right, well,
ever.
It is.
So good on Maura.
She was also
really
Catwoman.
Catwoman?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In The Batman.
Get out of here. When was she? I gotta
All
right, look
maybe
this
not
up.
In that one.
I gotta look this up.
I think in the TV show. The Adam West TV show.
Oh, okay. That's
I think.
Strange.
Not positive of that. Don't quote me. But yeah, I think Madonna hates that, or she hates Madonna's version of that song. There's some level of Santa Baby beef there.
Santa Baby beef.
Yeah. The worst
the
kind.
The blood will run.
Notoriously.
Red in the Santa Baby beef streets.
Notoriously the worst kind. All right, number 5 was Eartha Kitt. Number 4, Kitt's ranked. Kitt from A League of Their Own.
I've been traded to Racine. You? I told them to trade me. Oh, yeah, they'd really trade you. Miss Star, Miss Perfect.
Yeah, it works out for her at the end, though. I mean, say what you want. Kitt comes up with the big moment. Now, do you think we discussed this earlier? Does she drop the ball on purpose?
You brought that conspiracy theory up to me, something that I was not really quite emotionally able to grasp the concept of when that movie came out.
You thought about it since?
And I 100% think that she dropped it on purpose
because
she knew
too.
She was leaving the game.
Right. She's giving her sister her due.
Yeah.
It's like, her big moment. It's her big sacrifice.
Yep. I can't imagine the other way of that ending with her holding it and walking away a hero, and Kitt is just left to.
It's everything Ryan Tannehill won't do for Malik Willis.
Way to bring it back.
I'm just kidding.
Wow. All right, Kitt is that's a good one. I like that one.
Lori Petty, also in Point Break, and
also in,
most recently in what was the movie about sort of that post-apocalyptic TV show that came out this year. I forget what it was called. I couldn't get all
the way
through
it. Well, she was in Tank Girl, too.
Yeah, she was in Tank Girl. Good job, Lori Petty. All right, that's number 4. Number 3, Kitt's ranked. We'll stay local for this one. President of the United States of America. Kitty.
Oh, so not a kitty. A little close.
A little repetitive, but that's fine.
That is not...
Meow, meow, meow.
If you're going to say Kitty, then the band Kitty has to be involved.
How about Kitty Hawk?
Kitty Hawk could be involved, too.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of nominations ranked, one that I believe you forgot.
Who's that?
Are Kit Kat's on this list?
Hold on. Hold on a second there, Moira. Hold on. Drum Kit we did not put on the list. That's a good one. Kitat County is also a good one. Those are good. Yep. I like that. I like where you're coming from. But no, number two.
First aid kit.
Kit ranked, Moira.
Give me a break. Give me a break. Take me off a piece of that Kit Kat.
So which song do you think will be in your head? The Kit Kat song or Kitty on My Foot and I Want to Touch?
Oh, say Santa Baby's going to be in my head.
Oh, or Santa Baby.
And I cannot be the only person that didn't know that wasn't Eartha Kitt.
Everyone knows that, Justin. Everyone.
No idea.
I'm just wondering what beat out Kit Kats.
Really? You don't have a guess?
No.
To me, this one actually seems fairly obvious as you're going through the various kits out there. I also will tell you that I've sort of come around on Kit Kat bars. I didn't like them for a long time. Not that I didn't like them. I kind of put them in the overrated candy category for a while. And in the last few years, I've kind of been coming around hardcore on Kit Kats. And what finally did it for me, put them over the top for me.
The fun size?
Two things. One, have you had the like Kit Kat chunk bars?
Nope.
They're like a little, they're more like, they're almost shaped more like a Three Musketeers or something like that. But they're Kit Kats, and they have harder chocolate, they have more chocolate, and the chocolate's a little crispier with the wafer. They're fantastic. I first had it in like New Zealand or something like that, and I brought them home because they were so good, and now you can kind of get them everywhere. But they're delicious. That, and I've enjoyed dipping, like when you break apart the Kit Kat bar, dipping the individual bars into peanut butter.
Oh my goodness.
It's okay. So good. And they're just strong enough to hold their own. Like, they don't break in the peanut butter. They're so delicious.
Wow. You also enjoyed the gingerbread ones at Christmas when they were here.
I did like those. Yes. Yeah, I
did. Tensile strength of Kit Kat bars. There's no drum kit in here?
Well, we said that just a minute ago. Somebody texted that one in.
The emergency roadside kit.
Those are not as fashionable as they once were. Kit Harington is a good one. Played Jon Snow, of course, in Game of Thrones. There's some other good kits, but I think number one should be fairly obvious, whether you grew up with the show or learned about it later.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor, K-I-T-T for easy reference, a kit if you prefer.
There you go, from Knight Rider, Kit, played by the guy who was number one, what, yesterday?
Tuesday.
Mr. Feeney was number one in TV teachers ranked, and he's the voice of Kit?
William Daniels.
I would say that this show's got a little bias towards William Daniels. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
It sure sounds that way anyway, right?
Well, I mean, if you're going to put the song Kitty, I still think you should put the band Kitty.
I don't really know the band Kitty.
Oh.
I accidentally saw them in concert once when I went to see Bush. They were with Godsmack and Bush.
Yep.
They just, it's girls, they can play their instruments. Like, the drummer was awesome, but it's just a bunch of women that they just scream. They just yell, they scream and, like, growl the whole time.
A Canadian heavy metal band.
Well, it's really weird that we didn't put them on our list then.
Yeah. Brackish.
I can't say that I enjoyed
place in history for me.
The screaming, but they, their musical abilities were pretty good.
How many times has the Knight Rider theme been sampled in rap songs? Like, a million?
Oh, you know what? You're right. There's a rapper that we would have missed here, too.
Who's that?
Oh, I'm going to remember it like right when we get off here.
253 with your Kit Kat and peanut butter strategy says, I hear the pounds adding up.
Well, yeah, no kidding. All right, well, I'm on my way to the doctor. I got to go. Good. Thank you from the 425, the whole kit and caboodle. We're pretty well done. No, I got to go to the doctor today. I'm refusing to be weighed in. I'm going to try it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go to the doctor, and they're going to say, okay, it's time to get, we need your height and weight. And I'm going to say no.
Defiantly.
Yeah. I'm going to say it with great attitude so that hopefully I can be removed from the doctor's office. Now, all right, I'll let you know how that goes. And No G tomorrow, unfortunately. Stacy's going to step in his place. So hopefully the Mariners. Wouldn't you really like to see the Mariners win tonight? I really would like to see that happen. Like, you're home.
Yeah.
Let's get back to this here, boys. Here. Like,
yeah.
Hit the ball. How about score like 7 runs and win like 7-2?
Robbie tonight?
Shoves. Yeah. Right? Like 7-2. Let's go. Get a win. Make everybody feel
back
good.
Back in the electric factory.
Exactly. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Goodbye.